Are you truly stepping into the role of leader in your own life the way you know you're meant to? What shifts would unlock your full potential? It's time to explore those answers with the host of Sacred Leadership, intuitive business coach, Charisse Alexander.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Sacred Leadership with Charisse. I'm joined here today with Dr. Dorothy Martin Neville. And today we will be talking about becoming the leader your vision demands. Just to give you a brief, very brief intro about Dr. Dorothy. Dr. Dorothy is a speaker, an author, a consultant, a master coach, and frequent radio and television guest appearing in 9 countries and has been featured on OWN, as well as the Huffington Post, NBC, and ABC. A psychotherapist, Dr. Dorothy was in practice for 25 years as a clinical instructor at the University of Connecticut, co-chair of the advisory board of a multi-million dollar NIH grant, and the recipient of the NIH grant funding to research her work. She is a pioneer in CAM in the United States. So I don't want to take away all of your shine, Dr. Dorothy. I will turn it over to you to really ask. I'm really looking forward to today's conversation. We were chatting right before we started, and we were doing the whole show before it started. So tell me a little bit more about yourself, and thank you so much for joining me here today.
Oh, you're so welcome. I've been around a long time, so that could take up the whole hour telling you about myself. But just a wee bit more than what you mentioned truly is that I'm a woman who started off in an orphanage and grew up in the housing projects in the inner city. And really, my life purpose for many years was to show that anything is possible. You know, when we have clarity of vision, when we know who we are, or at least have a sense of who we are and the impact we want to have in the world. That clarity, that focus takes you to experiences you never would have imagined. And what I have learned is that somebody who never knew a woman who'd been to college, never knew anybody who had a business of their own, they were all, where I grew up, policemen. The men were policemen or cops or firemen. And women just stayed at home. And mm-hmm. So all of this has been an adventure of founding 6 companies and being blessed with the journey I've led. So there's so much more to it all, but what an adventure it has been with an international flair. I lived in the Caribbean for 10 years. So it's on a very small little island of Anguilla. So there's so many adventures to be had in life if we're willing to take risks and truly live this life and not survive it.
Indeed. And so I guess maybe you might not call yourself this, but the word that comes to mind is a little bit of a trailblazer. Would you consider? Yes. So thank you, trailblazer.
You're welcome.
And what was that like then for you? Because, you know, I imagine, I know for myself, when I was, younger and having my kids and during those years, I definitely remember feeling like I needed to choose between raising kids and, going out and right. working. And realistically speaking, that wasn't that long ago. So I imagine for you that it would have been definitely, you would have been the thought leader of the time, somebody who would have been challenging societal norms. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, what I did was my vision growing up was I was going to get married at, where I grew up, you graduate from high school in May and you get married in June. And I was going to get married at 17 and I was going to have 20 children. I love children. And I was just going to be stay at home, married, take care of these 20 children and living in this apartment. And
that's quite a number. 20.
The Irish tend to have a lot of kids in those days, I'm telling you. And that was just going to be what we did. And that didn't end up being the case, so I realized I wanted more. And that meant to me doing more than just that. So I literally couldn't go to college. I couldn't go to nursing school because my children, because at the time my high school was unaccredited. Mm. And so at unaccredited inner city schools, which could happen in an inner city, no nursing school or college could accept me. I became a nun and then a Catholic nun. I entered the convent when I found out nuns do social work. So I became a Catholic nun for a number of years with a long black habit on. My name was Sister James Marie. And then that woman could go to college. So I began a college education at that point. But by the time I, eventually left there, became an international airline stewardess. And when I got married, I married for life in my mind's eye. You don't get married to get divorced. And I was divorced when after 15 years, and I had a kindergartner and a fourth grader. And I had a choice at that point in time. To me, it wasn't, do I want a career? It was, I'm going to have to support my children. And how am I going to do that? And because I had been blessed and within religious life to be sent to college, that I could decide, how am I going to do this? And I got my master's and became a therapist. And I was terrified because I didn't know anybody who had done this, right? And when you're out there on your own, it's amazing when you're fighting for survival, especially as a parent, when you're fighting for your children. That my children were not going to be raised in the housing projects. They were not going to be raised in the inner city. My children were going to have something better than I had growing up. Then when I got my master's, I became a therapist. And in terror, thought, how am I going to get patients? How would anybody even know I exist? And I wrote a 2-page paper, and I went and asked. I spoke at every book club, every church, every synagogue, every women's group, every place that would let me in. I spoke, filled with terror, but knowing, when you have a vision, you walk with the terror. You don't use that as permission to stop. And so I went and spoke everywhere, and I was so blessed. Within 3 months, I was seeing 42 patients a week, and I had a 6-month waiting list for my afternoon hours that lasted over 20 years until I left the country. And fear and protection of my babies is really what was the motivator for me. So I didn't say, gee, I want to be a pioneer. Gee, I'm going to do what hasn't been done before. It's just, I will do what I need to do to make sure my children have a life that I want them to have.
And what a strong motivation.
It's what happens,
So for you, and that obviously makes so much sense. You had to become very, very focused, laser focused, and very myopic because of your familial situation at that point in time, which in a lot of ways I think makes it easy to put your nose down and just stay very, very focused and not become distracted by fear. So even though you had that to anchor you in your path, did you feel like you also had support of your community while you were forging this path?
My mother thought it was the oddest thing in the whole world. She couldn't fathom what I was doing, and she thought I was getting too big for my britches, which was an expression that was used. And my brothers and sisters just kept saying, damn, Dot, you go for it. You do it. You do it. So I had my brothers and sisters' support, but In the process of that, when I opened up my practice, one of my graduate professors had asked me, he said, I want to develop a practice, a group practice. He had a psychiatrist who had had his own practice for years. And he invited 7 of us in when I was his student, just before graduating from graduate school. He said, well, you're a bond therapist. I want you to join my organization and we'll do this. And I said, sure. So the blessing of that was I had a built-in community of other therapists. I mean, some had been in practice for years, some were brand new as well. And we all came together as psychotherapy specialists. And it was a gift to have others that welcomed me into the world, not realizing they were welcoming into the world as a newly single woman, as a newly graduated person, that I was opening up to a world I never imagined being in, that had never crossed my mind would be my reality. So I was still adjusting to being a single woman or single mom, and adjusting to, oh my God, I have a graduate degree. Can you believe I have a graduate degree? I can't, I was the most educated person in my family, and it was, all an adjustment. It's you have to, as I've learned, as you grow and change, you have to continuously change your self-image. You have to continually change how you see yourself in the world. You have to continuously change how you carry yourself. Because I wasn't this woman living at home, raising 2 children in a suburban, rural suburban home. I was now working in a city, and I was now here, and it's a whole different sense of self that needs to be developed quickly.
And did you feel with that? Because, today we talk a lot about imposter syndrome. So you had this vision of what your life would be like when you were, 17, 18. Life happens. You find yourself a few years down the road, and that idea that you had is no longer what is. So as you find yourself moving and evolving, and maybe the answer is, well, actually, I'll let you answer the question, but did you find that you struggled with imposter syndrome as you moved from this idea or this vision of what you were going to be into this very new version of yourself?
Not imposter syndrome, because what I a gift that comes natural to me is just to be real, to be honest and to be real and to do my best. There are times when I hoped I had the skills needed to do what needed to be done. But it was an imposter because I knew that this was not what I imagined, and I was more filled with awe. I'm not very religious, but I'm highly spiritual. And I just really trusted that God, the Holy Spirit, whatever, was guiding me and protecting me and supporting me in all of this. And I just hoped and prayed that I would be what these people needed me to be for them, to support them on their journey. And with one of the gifts of that was every week we would have supervision. And any questions we had, any problems we had, we could present, and we'd all discuss it and help each other out. And intermittently during the week, if there was an issue, you could talk to somebody and say, "Oh my God, what do I do about this? How do I refer them? And what do we do? And what kind of medications should they be on?" And there was always people to talk to. The gift of community is you always have others you can run things by,
I think one of the things that you just said that I think is the sign of an excellent leader or somebody who has the makings of a great leader is that even though it wasn't imposter syndrome, it was certainly questioning to a certain extent, do I have what these folks need to support them in their own growth and their evolution. So it's almost like holding that container, being very aware and cognizant of you're here to help, you're here to serve, and do I not questioning whether you can, but whether or not you have the tools at the time, the resource at the time for the person at the time. And I think that's such a signature of such potential to be a strong leader. Do you agree?
Yeah, I
So,
do. I do. A strong leader needs to have a lot of humility, a strong sense of self, but a strong that I am, as I define it with my clients. I want to help develop that I am. But that I am is just an acknowledgement of all of the strength and the goodness and the power I possess, in addition to all the limitations I possess. Right? So there's a humility. Humility is truth. Humility truly means that I own all of my power and my strength and goodness, but I'm also fully aware of my limitations and that other part of me that is not my best self. But I don't pretend I don't have that. I've got both, and we all do,
And it's often something that I find myself saying, to my kids or even the people that I work with and lead, being very honest in that I don't have all the answers. I don't. So if
We
I
don't
don't
even
have
have all
all
the
the
questions. We
answers,
don't even have all the
well, how
questions.
can you possibly, right? Like the journey
Right.
is one day at a time, one moment at a time. So I have zero idea what's coming tomorrow. So I don't even know what the questions are going to be tomorrow. And it's
Right.
almost like sometimes, at least what I experience here, is that the folks that I'm surrounded with have this expectation that I expect that they know everything and that I expect that they have no questions. I'm like, I would be concerned. I am concerned if you think that you should know everything at 25, So it's so the truth, I love that you're talking about, the humility that again, another quality or characteristic of a really strong leader, that ability to be very strong and self. And when I say strong, what I mean is self-aware, but really also being able to hold space and allow people to be human and vulnerable.
We've got to. But see, that's when we've done enough inner work, we are so aware of our humanity as well as our divinity. Right. And if we're aware of our humanity and our divinity, we're going to be aware that everybody else possesses that same divinity and that same humanity.
Absolutely.
And in humility, I can, with people I work with, point out and say, you sabotage yourself on a regular basis this particular way. And they don't hear that as a criticism because it's not. It's just a
Yes.
statement.
Yes.
This is how I see you sabotaging yourself. It's going to impact you as well as the company. So I need to help you recognize when you do that and support you in with neuroplasticity, developing a new path, neural pathway, a new way of responding instead of reacting to whatever that is that causes you to self-betray.
Yes.
And when people see that you're offering that in unconditional love, that you're not offering it as a criticism, but as a critique, people are open to hearing it. People who are have any humility are open to hearing that. People who and it can appear as if they have a massive ego, but massive ego is a defense for no ego at all, right? So when people are at that place, they're not open to learning, and you need to accept that it won't work here because you're not open to growing. And I'm constantly growing. The people on my team are constantly growing. And so if you're somebody that's not willing to grow, it's not that your ego is massive or that's how you project. It's that this is all I'm going to get from you. I need to know that you're going to continue growing and more, because as I grow, I have more to bring to the company, which means I can expand my company or strengthen my company. I may not want to expand it. I don't want to franchise or whatever, but I would want to expand it. It depends on us. Every leader is different. But we need people who are willing to grow. And that there's a humility to that, but there's also an ego that says, I can grow without feeling I'm inadequate now. I'm the best I can be right now, but I'm going to be even better tomorrow or next week or next month, whatever the case may be. There's a gift in that. There's
Absolutely.
excitement in that also. To me, that makes life an
Yeah,
adventure.
it really does. I love that. And we are so going to continue because you took the words out of my mouth when you talked about when you started in on the humility that is needed as a leader. We're going to go to our first commercial break, but we will be right back with Dr. Dory and be or Dorothy in becoming the leader your vision demands. We'll be right back.
Leadership isn't reserved for CEOs or world leaders. It's something each of us is called to embody in our own lives. But how do you awaken that inner leader with clarity and confidence? On Sacred Leadership with intuitive business coach Charisse Alexander, you'll discover powerful tools and spiritual insights to align your words, actions, and outcomes. Tune in every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central, 9 Mountain, and 8 Pacific, right here on InspiredChoicesNetwork.com.
Are you a subject matter expert? Are you here to share your expertise with an audience waiting to hear from you in only the way you can deliver? Are you ready to have your voice amplified across the airwaves? Inspired Choices Network has a global radio platform streaming to millions of people across the world. Professionally produced and supported by an accomplished team every step of the way, you can broadcast from anywhere in the world, knowing your voice matters, and we ensure it is delivered with ease and efficiency. Eager to hear your message, the world awaits. Contact us today to become an Inspired Choices Network radio host. Email becomeahost@inspiredchoicesnetwork.com.
This is Sacred Leadership with Charisse Alexander. To participate in the program, join the live studio audience in our chat room at inspiredchoicesnetwork.com. You can also send an email to Charisse@pavitraleadership.com. Now back to the program.
Welcome back to Sacred Leadership with Charisse on the Inspired Choices Network. I am joined here today by Dr. Dorothy. And in the first segment, we were talking about Dorothy's journey and all the work that she has done. And right before we went to commercial, we were talking about humility being such an important characteristic or a very valuable characteristic for great leaders to have. And Dr. Dorothy, where I wanted to go back to was when we were talking about the humanity of it, right? And really understanding that hopefully the people that we're working with get that we're all learning, we're all evolving. So I don't have all the answers and you don't have all the answers. And just kind of dive a little bit more into that, because, you know, I personally work with a lot of young people, and I find that they struggle with that. And so when you talked about giving feedback, mm-hmm. and perhaps sometimes the defensiveness that comes with that. And I'm really, when I'm doing that, I'm trying to actually usually couch it in a way that I'm saying to people, like, I'm asking them questions versus saying things to them. Like, you know, did you look at it from this perspective? Maybe understand why somebody responded like this. You know, maybe they're not attacking you. Maybe they are giving you feedback so that you can continue to grow and evolve into, you know, whatever your position might be. You want to chat a little bit more about that?
Well, it's really, I believe all of us are called to leadership. Every single person on this mm-hmm. planet is called to leadership. Now, for some, that's leadership of their home. Mm-hmm. For some, it's the leadership of their life. For some, it's leadership of their own company or leadership within a company. It doesn't matter what it is. But a leader is simply somebody who chooses to own who they are and what they've committed to, right? And you could be a janitor in a school and you see there's a flutter or a great difficulty in another wing that's not your wing of the building. And you can say, it's not my job.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could step into your authority and your expertise and go over there quickly and help out and call whoever's division that is that may not have seen this and get yeah. help. But in the meantime, you respond immediately to a need and you fill it. That's yeah. a leadership quality. It wasn't on my agenda, but I saw something, I jumped in and I helped. That's taking a leadership position, no matter who you are, no matter what your job, no matter what your income, it doesn't matter whether you do that on the street, you do that in your career, you do that in your home. There's a problem, I'm here to help. There is yeah. something that's needed. I may be more intuitive and I can see that coming about and I'm going to intercept immediately to prevent that difficulty from happening. That yeah. is that ownership of my skills and my ability to be of service. And it's not just when it's asked for.
Do you think that there's confusion today? Because, you know, when I started this podcast, mm-hmm. that's almost exactly what I said. This isn't just about leadership in, you know, terms of business or institutions or governments or anything like that. This is about showing up as a leader in your life. So it could be as parental figures, as just somebody in the family, as somebody anywhere on the street, a stranger walking down the street. Do you think that there's confusion in society in terms of what that looks like? Because generally speaking, we call a leader somebody who's in a position of authority, and not necessarily authority of self, but authority over other people.
Well, because we're taught to see leadership as a position,
mm-hmm.
that there are real leaders, those in the C-suite. There yeah. are sort of leaders, those who are not quite in the C-suite. Then there are folks. It's like, excuse me?
Yeah.
That's insanity. That is absolute insanity. That we're all leaders. We are leaders that have different levels of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
But we all need to be leaders. We all need to be folks who lead our area. In retail, you've got somebody working in the makeup section and they order once a week, but they're out of a product. You know, somebody who doesn't own the leadership would just say, too bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody who's really a born leader is going to say, we've got a difficulty. Either we put a notice up and say we're temporarily out of this, or we find a way to resupply before the standard shipment. They deal with the problem. They deal with the situation as it arises, and not because they have to, but because they take ownership.
Yeah.
This is my area. And that's the I see somebody like that. I want to train them. I want to mm-hmm. train them too. They've got initiative. They have ownership of who they are and what they are doing.
Yep.
That person can be, if they choose, for some, that's what they want. That's the level of involvement they want in the business because their priority is elsewhere. God mm-hmm. bless them. What a gift they are to the company.
Mm-hmm.
But if they are somebody who has a vision within the organization, that's somebody I want to develop.
Yeah.
Because that's somebody who has already shown me they have owned their leadership. And I want to help them expand their leadership, expand their area of impact and influence, because they are already are impacting and influencing the company. So let's help them do it even better. Right.
And I couldn't have put it any better. I'm curious, with all of your years in leadership work, do you find that more people are stepping into leadership, shying away from leadership, they're indifferent? Is it, or is it kind of all over the place, or is it just all the same? Sometimes yes, sometimes no, in your
I think
experience?
It depends on the individual. I think that leadership is chosen either because it's a moral imperative, or it's chosen because of being driven by a desire for more money or more power or more power over or whatever the case may be. It's why are people moving into leadership? And some are moving away from leadership because there's such insecurities in the world right now. There's such insecurity certainly here in the States, and there's insecurities in the world. And leaders are not necessarily having the ability to have their say respected. And so it's really, I think that some of us, if we follow our own truth, we have no choice but to develop our leadership, because we're not called, we just don't do followers very well at all. You know, we don't do submissive very well at all. So we're aware that if I'm going to be happy, and if the people around me are going to be happy, I best develop my leadership skills and keep going, because I'm going to be sit here saying, no, I don't want to, like a 3-year-old. And rather than being a defiant little 3-year-old, I'm going to grow up quickly and develop the emotional intelligence I need and the mindfulness that I need to have the skill set to be an effective leader, and realize I'm called to leadership. So I'm going to be doing it and hope that it works out in an environment and in a context in which I can continue to grow and develop, having greater influence and impact. You know?
Yes.
So I think it's we are who we are, right? And leadership is, as I said earlier, is something we're all called to, but I think that now there are others who may be frightened of it because there's so much insecurity. But it's just frightened in a particular arena. It's not frightened of my leadership in and of itself.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
But, you know, I suppose, and I get that, especially in a significant position of power and authority, and we don't need to dive into politics, but we're just going to use the example of the States. And maybe why there might be some insecurity within that. But, you know, the one thing I think I've probably become more aware of over the years is, like, leadership doesn't need to be brash, sassy, and abrasive. Leadership can absolutely be just quiet strength, you know, show and people follow, right? Or people might say, oh, you've got some kind of secret sauce going on there. Like, what's, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be the way that we would generally envision what a leader is. What are your thoughts around that, right? Even if there is insecurity, how do we do it in a way that's still authentic, and we can encourage other people to step up and step into their own leadership in their life?
Well, what I would say is that as a species, I believe we are meant to continuously evolve. And that there was a time when leadership meant power over. I'm in charge, I'm the boss, and this is what we're doing. And I am the only one that has a say in anything in this area, period, right? That no longer works. That people try that, that's now a dictator, right? That's now somebody who has intelligent, emotionally intelligent people not able to work with them. Emotionally intelligent people frequently start leaving those organizations and either create their own companies or find a company where there is room for massive leadership, where there's room for massive growth. And emotional intelligence and mindfulness have become much more seen as necessary.
Yeah.
Much more a part of effective leadership. Because leadership isn't about me, it's about us. It's about the shared vision we have in our company. It's about the shared purpose we have in what we're doing, whether this is a nonprofit we're talking about, or an organization, a large organization, or an entrepreneurial organization.
Yeah.
That it's about a shared vision and making things happen. And if the leader has to be busy dragging everybody behind them, the leader is way down.
Mm-hmm.
If the leader has helped develop the leadership and everybody in the organization, they're going together as a united force to really create change and have far greater impact and influence.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important to recognize, what does leadership look like to me?
Mm-hmm.
Because we all have it. So what does it look like to me? Because if I'm going to be a leader, is it something in alignment with all of those around me? Are they going to be coming forward with me? Or is it going to work?
Yeah. We are going to go to our second break. And when we come back, I want to chat about the inner work that needs to be done. That's a juicy one, isn't it? So we will be right back where we can talk with Dr. Dorothy about becoming the leader your vision demands. We'll be right back.
Leadership isn't reserved for CEOs or world leaders. It's something each of us is called to embody in our own lives. But how do you awaken that inner leader with clarity and confidence? On Sacred Leadership with intuitive business coach Charisse Alexander, you'll discover powerful tools and spiritual insights to align your words, actions, and outcomes. Tune in every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central, 9 Mountain, and 8 Pacific, right here on InspiredChoicesNetwork.com.
How wonderful would it be to carry your favorite Inspired Choices Network host with you throughout your day? Well, now you can. Inspired Choices Network now has its very own mobile app. Our free app offers live streaming shows, along with thousands of podcasts and TV episodes. Our shows cover a wide variety of topics. Whether you're waking up with us, carrying us through the day, and taking us to bed with you, we're always here for you to enjoy. We're easy to find. Just search for Inspired Choices Network in the Apple App Store or Google Play Store.
This is Sacred Leadership with Charisse Alexander. To participate in the program, join the live studio audience in our chat room at InspiredChoicesNetwork.com. You can also send an email to Charisse@PavitraLeadership.com. Now back to the program.
Welcome back to Sacred Leadership with Charisse on the Inspired Choices Network. I am joined here today by Dr. Dorothy Martin Neville, where we are talking about becoming the leader your vision demands. And right before we went to break, again, Dr. Dorothy and I were talking about the characteristics that we felt were important for really great leaders to have, and really how we become the leaders in our own lives, that it doesn't actually have to be, you know, necessarily in big important roles, because being a leader in your house and in your family is an extremely important role. And it's so interesting to me, Dr. Dorothy, that you said that, because that was actually ultimately the point of the creation of this podcast, right? Which was, how do we show up as the leaders in our own lives? Forget organizations. And as silly as it might sound, it's really only in the last few months this year where I realized that, you know, lots of leaders, I was working with a coach. This is where it came to be an awareness. I was working with a coach, and I felt for some reason like I had to separate work and my personal life, because we were very much focused on business. And I remember even coming to a few sessions where I was like super flustered, and I'm like, there's just so much going on in my personal life right now, and I can't get clear on the work piece because there's so much going on in my person. And I felt guilty. But then I think I had the realization, like, we're whole human beings. I can maybe put a pin in something personally for a few hours so I can focus on the task at hand. But when we have really traumatic things that are going on in our world, sometimes it's impossible to do that. So one of the things you'd said in a previous segment was the necessary inner work that must happen in order to become an effective leader. Do you want to dive into that a little bit more? Pardon the light, that's Nigeria. So
there's so much to that, that and part of the work that I do as a coach is I work with leaders who have been highly successful. And they frequently are on their second, third, or fourth marriage, and their children are not talking to them, right? And they've made it, when I put that in quotes, they've made it, whatever that means to them. And as they sit quietly, they realize this is a huge vacuum. And they may try to fill that with numerous affairs, with alcohol or with drugs or workaholism, whatever it may be. But they end up that there's a void in there. And I work with them to help them discover that man or woman that got lost back there in their 20s that was filled with vision and excitement and passion and altruism and whatever else was there, that they were going to be doing this. And they got so focused on the outside success that who they are got lost.
Yep.
And they're doing their role beautifully, but they were so focused out there, they forgot that there's an entire internal here, right? And I'm opening up a school in March, the Institute of Transformational Coaching and Leadership, to help coaches and leaders learn about this inner work, about how to see themselves and how to see others. Because I believe it is so much that it is imperative that we get this. That we do the work. What is the core wound I came into this life with? Is it that I'm not good enough? Is it that I will never succeed? Is it that I'm not enough? What is it? Because I will recreate wounds. I will create stories that I tell myself, and I will keep tearing that scab off that wound so that I live that wound on a regular basis, because the filter through which I see the world is that I'm not enough.
Yeah.
Which sets my life script up to prove, constantly prove and prove and prove. And if I'm busy proving I'm good enough, I don't have the energy to truly see with clarity what's around me. And even if I'm proving that and I get in a leadership position, I still can't be the most effective possible leader because I'm too busy seeing through this narrow, narrow lens of my need to prove. So it's so imperative. What are the wounds? What are the defenses I use? Instead of feeling sad or nervous, do I go to anger? So how many leaders are angry all the time? Because that's the emotion they allow themselves to feel. You know, what's the persona I've developed? Because none of that is truth about who I truly am.
Yeah.
Who I truly am calls everybody else in the room to be who they truly are.
Indeed. And, you know, I think the imperative part of that is, and I'm so glad that you're doing that work. And that's also work that I surprise people that work with me. If you're listening, this is what we're doing in the new year. But, you know, I was having a conversation with somebody and I said, this is what we're going to, because when there's too much anger, conflict, we can't just have open dialogue, people jostling for, I mean, there's going to be politics in every environment, but why? Why? Like, if I'm confident in what I'm doing and I know what my wounds are and I can see when they're being activated, then I can witness myself and not become triggered. I can simply observe and then do the work around that. And I think part of the key with that is, well, the key is always in the youth. And as I said, a lot of the folks that I work with are young, and I see them being triggered every single day around me. And to me, I'm just like, why are you so agitated about that? I don't understand why you would give yourself so much upsetness over somebody asking a question. A question doesn't mean you don't have the answer. A question is somebody inquiring for more information. It's not an insult. So my intention is to really work with the young people in our organization and begin to like peel back those layers in ways that respect their journey, but also just get them. And to me, that's always through questions, right? Just getting you to ask yourself some better questions about why you're having such a response to something, right?
Yeah. Because when we can own it, we don't end up blaming the world for it. Because if I can't own, you touch something, you triggered something in me, I'm going to be so busy blaming you for being an act. when maybe they're not. Maybe it's the way they phrase something. Maybe they did something incorrectly. Maybe they didn't hear you say something. But when they have to become the bad guy, it's just so you can feel like the good guy. So let's take a step back. What if you're both good guys and there's a misunderstanding? What that ends up doing is I'm eliminating the idea that the entire world is filled with enemies out to sabotage me, or filled with enemies out there trying to prove I'm not good enough, or they're all against me, and however I filter that in. What if nobody's against you? What if, even if a robber sees you and goes for you, it's not personal. You happen to be the person that showed up at that right time. This isn't about you. It's not personal. It can feel it, but it's not. You know, it's a rarity when they know exactly who they want to go for. They just go for the most convenient person to rob. You know, so it's like, whoa, we can find ways to make everything about us.
We sure do.
And it's not. Most of the time, it has nothing to do with us. So it's, you know, it's stepping back. Again, that's humility. It's stepping back into, I am not so important. The entire world is spending all the time thinking about me. Because they probably aren't. All right.
Yeah, 99.9% of the time they're not. People are so focused on their own stuff. And you know, in fact, I think I had one of those moments this week where somebody had said I was mean, and I was actually kind of shocked. I was like, "What? Me? Not mean?" And I said, "Tell me, what did I say?" And he said, "Well, you told somebody that they were right, you were wrong, and you didn't want to focus on the problem. You wanted to focus on the solution." I said, okay. Yeah, it was. And so when I took a step back from what he was saying, I said, okay, I get your perspective from his perspective, because I wasn't willing. Because I said to him, I'm like, this is somebody that we pay to give us a service.
Right.
And I'm not allowing somebody who we pay to give us a service abuse me.
Right.
And want to sit on the phone and focus on how I was wrong. I already acknowledged I was wrong. I said, you were right. I'm taking accountability, and I'm saying, but I don't want to waste energy focusing on the problem. The problem, we've already identified it. I got the problem. Let's focus on how we move forward now. And so I guess that was mean, but I was okay with that.
Yeah. But that's where we have to, again, somebody's filter.
Yes.
Somebody's filter is being dumped.
Their lens. Yeah.
And when you're a healthy leader, it never is about the problem. If I look at the problem, it's only so I can understand how it happened, so I can help it not happen again, not so I can find out who's the dope that did it. Who can I blame for this? Who can I go and judge and point my finger at? But useless. How did it happen? What can we do to make sure it doesn't happen again? And now, where are we going to go forward? And sometimes we'll do that after. Right now, we just need to solve the problem, and then we can look at how it happened. It all depends on the severity and the emergency of it all. But but when we are insecure, we always have to do blame. Because God forbid it should land on me, because I'm not going to be good enough, or I'm going to be bad, or I might be fired, or I might be judged, or whatever the case may be. What if we skip blame? What if we just acknowledge something happened? We need to identify it, and we need to solve it. It's so much easier without the drama. It is so much easier. But notice the reaction. If we learned how not to react, and we always lived in response, we wouldn't be looking for the good guys and the bad guys. We wouldn't be looking for who blew it and who should be judged.
Well, I mean, I think you said it earlier in the segment, right? Like when we're looking for who blew it, who to judge, whose fault it is, it's just really to make myself feel important in that moment.
Yeah, and detached from it all. I'd had nothing to do with it. It wasn't me.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't do it, or it's not my work. It's not my job. It's not my responsibility. I can't tell you how many times I hear that, and it's almost infuriating, because it's just like, yeah, but that person not doing their task, or you helping them, now does impact your work. So who wins now? Nobody wins, because now we're behind, and now we got to go back even further to fix it, because we stopped because this line has been crossed, or this, I don't want anybody crossing that line, or I'm not going to cross that other line. So it's how do you get people? Because, you know, when you talk about the blame piece, right? it's often that story that's on loop. And, you know, so I'm often talking to people and saying to them, I'm like, there's a story on loop that you're telling yourself over and you don't know it. You're so
right.
conditioned to it that you don't know that that story is on loop. And for you, do you find that that's often the most difficult thing to break is first recognizing what the story is or identifying what the story is, and then actually breaking that story and telling yourself a new story?
I when that situation happens to me, what I do is I go back to, because I try not to do this thing, you mm-hmm. know, I go back and I'll say, okay, when I was growing up in South Boston, it was all Irish Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
And we all had tuna fish on Friday nights because Catholics didn't eat meat on Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody I knew had tuna fish on Friday nights. So my belief was the entire world, every country, every people, everywhere had tuna fish on Friday nights because everybody I knew did. So therefore, that's a universal truth. Everybody has tuna fish on Friday nights. Until I was a junior in high school and I was at Boston Public Library and I met this gorgeous boy who happened to be Jewish, and he had never had tuna fish in his life. And I couldn't fathom, how could you not have had tuna fish? This makes no sense to me, because this is how the world works. And, you know, and so when I can share that and people can laugh and say, boy, that was a small image. Yes, it was. And that's what we do. And that's what we do. They can begin to see at this point, I could care less who eats tuna fish or doesn't eat tuna fish. That's an irrelevant issue. But there was a belief system that I knew was right,
mm-hmm.
except it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's look at this belief system you have that you think is right. Could it be that in your innocence, it was? But mm-hmm. as we grow and develop emotional intelligence, as we grow and develop awareness that we're not talking who's right or who's wrong, we're talking who's innocent and unexperienced.
Yeah.
Right? So what if what you believe isn't really true? It's what you've been taught. It's not a lie. It's what you've been taught, but it's not a truth. What if we looked at it differently?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, all of a sudden, I'm not saying you're dumb. I'm not saying you were wrong. All of a sudden, I'm saying, hey, welcome to life.
Yeah.
Welcome to doing it differently.
Mm-hmm.
And then say, every time this comes up for you, that's part of the tuna fish story. What if that isn't the truth? What if it's really different? And there's no good guys or bad guys. It's just different. And with that, then it's sort of like, all right, it's okay to have lots of ideas. And then I'll simply talk about emotional intelligence, that when we can understand ourselves and we understand that I react to this, it's because I've been taught.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not looking to blame your parents or your teachers or whomever, but because I don't go there. But you've been taught that this is the way to see it. And maybe it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because all it's doing is creating angst in you.
Yeah.
Creating a difficult situation. What if we looked at a way to not have that angst in you?
Yeah.
That you'd be far more powerful, far more knowledgeable, far more wise. Oh, okay. I'll be far more knowledgeable. That sounds like a good idea. Let me do that.
Indeed. You know,
and eventually, once you've done that a couple of times, people just look at you and say, what? Okay, I can come in right away because I don't need to prepare them. They're already set that I'm not judging. Let's go in and do that.
Yes.
And it becomes far easier, you know, because if we don't get them to see it's a story, it's not a truth.
Mm-hmm.
We're stuck.
Yeah.
Life's too short.
Life Indeed.
Is too short to be stuck
it
in
is.
Stories.
Yeah. That are not true. That are just possibly not true.
Most likely not true.
Exactly. We are going to head to our final break today. Geez, the time is just flying. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about leadership as a spiritual calling. So we will be right back. Yes, I know we don't have a lot of time, but we will be right back.
Leadership isn't reserved for CEOs or world leaders. It's something each of us is called to embody in our own lives. But how do you awaken that inner leader with clarity and confidence? On Sacred Leadership with intuitive business coach Charisse Alexander, You'll discover powerful tools and spiritual insights to align your words, actions, and outcomes. Tune in every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central, 9 Mountain, and 8 Pacific, right here on InspiredChoicesNetwork.com. This is Sacred Leadership with Charisse Alexander. To participate in the program, join the live studio audience in our chat room at InspiredChoicesNetwork.com. You can also send an email to Charisse@PavitraLeadership.com. Now back to the program.
Welcome back, everybody, to Sacred Leadership with Charisse on the Inspired Choices Network. Dr. Dorothy, I fibbed. We literally have 4 minutes left, so I'm going to ask my last question and make it a juicy one. But I just wanted your thoughts on, you know, approaching leadership as a spiritual quality. I mean, you're just, I get goosebumps when I think about that, but please.
Oh, yeah. To me, when we incarnate, we're born, we have a spiritual journey that is about developing our better selves, allowing our soul, our essence, whatever your faith system is, to allow that to radiate. So that means I need to recognize the defenses, the wounds, the masks, all of those things, to let me radiate, because I'm the gift I bring to the world. Mm-hmm. That's my personal journey. But we also come in with a world purpose. My purpose in life is to help make this world a better place. And how I make this world a better place is all dependent upon what are my innate gifts that I brought in? Mm-hmm. What's my innate wisdom that I brought in? What is the wisdom I'm developing along my path? And when we look at that, we're talking about leadership. I'm here to lead my life and discover my own personal growth needs that I need to look at to become a better version of me. But also, if I'm here to make the world a better place, I bet sit up a little taller and be ready to go and make this world a better place in a way only I can do. And there may be 1,800 or 18,000 coaches out there, but not one of them is going to do it exactly the same way I do it, right? And so because everything is about energy, I see everything as energy. That energy reflects the essence of who I am, the essence of my being. And some people are going to be drawn to that. Some people are going to be repulsed by that. That's okay. Mm-hmm. Those that are repulsed by it will find another coach that resonates in a way that works for them. It doesn't mm-hmm. make me good or bad. It just says that the resonation is much better over here. But while I'm developing my best self in leading and making the world a better place in a way only I can do, I am owning that spiritual call to leadership that reflects my best ability to have influence and impact in the greatest way possible. And the more I own that leadership, the more creative and adaptive and growth focused I'm going to be, so that we have one spiritual purpose, one spiritual calling. And Mayan, from the time of 6, I wanted to help other women in the projects learn they don't have to live in violence. They don't have to live in. Mm-hmm. And that's calling people to live their best selves, to own their personal power, to make their mm-hmm. lives and the lives of others around them better. Now, I did that in religious life as a social worker. I then did it later in private practice as a psychotherapist, as a psychologist. I then did it in becoming a coach in my schools and some of my businesses. I opened up a school. I created a method of energy medicine. I'm a pioneer here. Thousands mm-hmm. of people were taught how to recognize this is a spiritual purpose. And when we're not at peace spiritually, we're not at peace emotionally, which mm-hmm. makes us not at peace physically. So dis-ease here spiritually mm-hmm. creates dis-ease emotionally, which creates dis-ease physically. So all of a sudden, I'm talking about something that allopathic medicine or Western medicine is saying that's not true. Emotions mm-hmm. have nothing to do with illness. Now, 30 years later, they're saying, gee, we've just discovered, you know, that emotions have a lot to do with physical health. Can you believe it? I can.
Yes. Shocking.
I can. Yes. You know, I think maybe I've been teaching that for years, you know? And then why is my emotions up? Because my spiritual is up.
Yeah.
I'm not at peace. Because spiritually I'm thinking the Lord has forgotten about me, or I'm thinking the world is a horrible place and I've got to survive it. And that's impacting my emotions, impacting my physical health. Our spiritual calling is to be our best and to impact this world best way possible.
Thank you for listening to the Sacred Leadership Show.
Thank you so much, Dr. Dorothy.
11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central.
We'll have to do this again.
And 8 Pacific on the InspiredChoicesNetwork.com. Until then, continue taking small steps today to be a leader in your life.
Enjoy your time in Nigeria.